This sermon was recorded at Christ Church Overland Park, a congregation that seeks to be a people fully alive in God's kingdom.
So we are in a series on hospitality. We're preaching about hospitality. Our life groups are studying hospitality. We're raising money for hospitality. And why? Because as the Holy Spirit makes us the most hospitable people we can be, we're going to come fully alive. We're going to experience the abundant life of Jesus, and we're also going to be able to help bring that life to others. And hospitality is really key. We've covered already a variety of aspects of hospitality. We've talked about God's hospitality to us, shown to us in Jesus Christ. We've talked about the fact that churches are like hospitals where we welcome people and provide healing that they need. We've talked about the fact that hospitality is oftentimes missional. It involves a going out and not just a welcoming. But today we're going to think about hospitality in the church. This church, Christ Church. And we're going to do this by looking at these two passages of Scripture. Both are examples of hospitality, because both involve those with power giving it up for the sake of others. There are power dynamics in all relationships, right? If you come into my home or into my church, I have power that you don't have. I know the people. I know how things are done. I know where things are. And you don't. And so in order to be a good host, I have to surrender some of that power to make sure that you know where things are. You know how things are done, etc., etc. And we see these power dynamics at work in both of these readings. In John 4, Jesus makes time for an outsider, and it changes many people's lives. And in 1 Corinthians 8, Paul gives really radical instruction to the church in Corinth. He says, those who are essentially strong in faith should be deferential in their treatment of the weak. And so I want us to look at these two passages and try to draw some parallels to our life together. And we'll do it under three headings: hospitality in Jesus, hospitality in the early church, and hospitality and Christ Church. So let's think about hospitality and Jesus. And let's begin with this question: who are the Samaritans? If we don't understand who the Samaritans are and the relationship with Jews, then we are going to miss the point. So who are the Samaritans? Well, just a brief history. In 740 BC, so a long time ago, The Assyrians invaded northern Israel and essentially took a bunch of Israelites back to Assyria as captives, slaves. Now, the capital city, if you're wondering who are the Assyrians, the capital city of Assyria was Nineveh, the Ninevites. So the Assyrians take all these Israelites into exile to Assyria. At the same time, the Assyrians sent some of their own people to settle in the land of Israel. Right? So they take Israelites out of Israel, some of them, and send Assyrians to settle in their place. Well, they didn't take all the Israelites, so there's some Israelites that remain in Israel now living alongside these Assyrians. And over time, some of these people intermingled, intermarried, and became a distinct people group called the Samaritans. The Samaritans. And as a distinct people group, they had their own religion, which was considered by the Jews a total corruption of the faith that they had received and practiced. They only accepted, for example, they only accepted the first five books of the Old Testament. And they built a new temple on what was called Mount Gerizim. Now, for faithful Jews, Samaritans were outsiders. Even though they lived in the land, they lived in Israel. They were outsiders. And they hated them. There was great animosity between the two groups. And so this is why it is an issue for Jesus to, quote, go through Samaria, as John mentions in verse 4. Let's look at this map. So Jesus is going from southern Israel down in Judea, going north. And you see the dotted line? Many faithful Jews, if they were going north, they would not travel through that land of Samaria, even though it was technically still Israel. That's where the Samaritans lived, and they would not travel that way. They would follow the dotted line, go all the way around. Well, Jesus said, no, we're just going to go straight through Samaria. And he does it on purpose. He does it very intentionally. He's, in essence, practicing missional hospitality. He's going through Samaria. And there he engages this Samaritan woman who is really the epitome of an outsider. The power dynamics between Jesus and this woman are all in his favor. She's a Samaritan. She's a woman. And women were not nearly considered equal in any way in that culture to men. So she's a Samaritan, she's a woman. Men were not to engage in any kind of conversation with women in public. And not only is she a woman, she's an immoral woman. She's had five husbands. She's living with a man who is not her husband. She would have been a social outcast. She is a powerless outsider whom Jesus should not have even acknowledged. He shouldn't have even acknowledged her presence. And she says as much. She says, you're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? And translated, you're not supposed to be talking to me. But Jesus meets her. He makes time for her. He actually gets into a very deep conversation with her. He asks her for water, but he lets her know that he also has some water for her. Jesus is, in essence, inviting her into the kingdom. He invites her to lay aside the water of her old life that actually, no matter how much she drinks, it only leaves her thirsty again. He invites her to leave that old water behind in exchange for the water of new life that will satisfy her thirst forever. So we see Jesus giving of his time and his social standing. You know, it's Jesus doing things like this, talking to a woman, an immoral woman in public. It's doing these kinds of things that made the religious leaders hate him. So don't think he's doing this without cost. He's doing this at tremendous cost to his own reputation and ultimately to his own well-being. He gave of his time and social standing to welcome this powerless woman. Jesus was hospitable, and it changed her life and many other people's lives. And so that's just a little bit about Jesus and hospitality. So now let's talk about hospitality and the early church. You know, this passage in 1 Corinthians, it can really be confusing. And we wonder, what in the world's going on here? So let's try to understand the context. I think there's three important things about the context here that we need to know. First, Corinth is a city in what is now modern-day Turkey. It was not Jewish territory. It was not in Israel. It was pagan territory from a Jewish perspective. It was part of the Roman Empire. But there were Jews who lived in Corinth. Just FYI, that means that the church in Corinth was made up of both Jewish and Gentile Christians, which means that the church, the Christian church, was the very first community in history where people from different ethnicities freely associated with one another. Like, this was a new idea in history that radically different people would freely associate one another and even call one another brothers and sisters. So the church in Corinth is made up of Jewish people who have become Christians and Gentiles who have become Christians. The second thing we need to understand about Corinth is that it was full of pagan temples. Pagan temples where people went and made animal sacrifices to their gods. Well, what happens when you sacrifice an animal? You sacrifice a goat or a cow. What happens? Well, some of the meat is probably set aside for the priests who are performing the sacrifice. And the rest is sent to the meat market, which was oftentimes right beside the temple, which makes sense, right? This is where the animals are being sacrificed. The meat then just gets sold right there to the meat market and then sold to the public. So there are these temples with meat markets right there beside them throughout Corinth. Now, the third thing we need to understand is that Paul describes some of the people in the community at Corinth as weak. He says they're weak. He's using power language. And so if there are those who are weak, that means there are those who are strong. Well, who are the weak? We're not exactly sure if the weak are a certain group of people like the Jewish Christians or the Gentile Christians. We think it's likely, but we're not sure, we think it's likely that they were new Jewish converts to Christianity. And so they, in their minds, they know the Ten Commandments. And they know that idolatry is the sin of all sins, right? That's the one thing you can't do. You can't be an idolater. You cannot worship other gods. And so to eat meat in their minds that has just been sacrificed to a pagan god, and now that meat has just been taken over to the meat market and made available for purchase. To purchase that meat and to eat it, in their minds, was to participate in the idolatry. And therefore, was strictly forbidden behavior. And they've actually written a letter to Paul about this, asking them what they should do. You can see in the reading, there are quotations when you look at it. So Paul is quoting back to them the letter that they have sent him. Now Paul tells them, actually, it's okay to eat this meat. Eating meat even though it's been sacrificed to an idol, doesn't make you an idolater. I mean, just think about how we conduct ourselves in commerce. We go to the grocery store, right? Well, does that, and we purchase things there, does that make us a participant in whatever the grocery store owner is doing? I mean, you could probably argue that either way, but, you know, we don't really have knowledge of what the grocery store owner is doing. And so Paul's saying, look, just because you eat this meat, it doesn't make you an idolater. And so he just tells them, well, go ahead and eat the meat, right? No, he doesn't. He doesn't. He says, look, if eating this meat is going to cause some people in the church difficulty, if it's going to cause them to stumble in their faith, to get tripped up, then he says, don't do it. Don't do it. He says, if that's the case, then don't eat this meat, even though it is actually your right to do so. Paul says he would never eat meat again if it's going to cause people to stumble. And that's a fairly radical statement. He's saying, look, I will just completely give this up if this is going to cause people to stumble. And so this is really an example of hospitality in the early church. Those with power, and the power in this case is the knowledge that Paul says, the knowledge that idols are nothing, because there really is only one true God. What we see here is the powerful sacrificing some of their power for the sake of the weak, those who do not have that same knowledge, those who do not have that same understanding. And so they altered their lives for the sake of others. Now I want us to think about hospitality in Christ Church. That's where I want to land this plane. I want us to talk about how these passages have implications for our life together here. What can we learn about being hospitable? Let's think about John chapter 4. What happens there? Well, Jesus takes the time and the effort to engage with this woman at the well. He had never met her, but he makes the effort to have a conversation. And to what result? What happens? Well, John tells us, many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed 2 days. And because of his words, many more became believers. And so simply taking the time to meet one person and to have a conversation changed an entire town. And so, with that in mind, what would happen if we as people took the time, if we made the effort to engage with the people around us? You know, instead of staying in our own isolated little worlds with our heads down, you know, what if we had our heads up and were ready to meet people and engage them in conversation? And I'm talking to myself here. I think if we just did that, which seems fairly simple, but I would suggest to you it's actually pretty complex. But if we just did that, we would see the Spirit of God do amazing things. And let's drill down into this a little further. What if we made the commitment to do that every time we came here to church? What if every time we came to church, we made it a point to meet someone we don't know and to learn something about that person? You know, if we did this, just that one simple thing. Okay, when I come to church, I'm going to meet someone I don't know. I'm going to learn something about them. If we did this, it would absolutely transform us as people, and it would transform our church. And God would do amazing things, and we would become much more effective at reaching people. So this is just a simple thing I'm asking all of us to do. And I emphasize do because ideas alone are not going to lead to change. Ideas alone will not change us. New ideas must be accompanied by new habits if we want to change. And so I'm asking all of us to embrace a new habit when we come to church. Meet someone you don't know and learn something about them. And that means, unless you're given a word of knowledge by the Spirit, which is actually possible, that means, though, in the absence of that, you're going to have to ask a question beyond their name. How'd you get here? How'd you learn about Christ Church? You can imagine what kind of questions you can ask. This is a new habit that I'm asking all of us to embrace. Meet someone you don't know and learn something about them. And this one habit, and it's interesting, I got an email from a person basically out of our discussion in life groups on Wednesday who basically said the same thing, and he didn't know that this was coming in the sermon. But he began to realize, well, just this one simple habit would actually change our whole church. And he's right. But some of you, I know, are thinking, wow, I don't know. So I want to give you a simple way that we can do this. You know, there are many opportunities for you to meet someone new and to learn something about them. There's many opportunities. You can do that before the service. You can do it after the service in the cafe. There are plenty of opportunities, but there's also an opportunity in the service. And at this service, there's actually two opportunities. We meet one another and greet them at the beginning of the service, right? And then we also pass the peace in our services. And so, where you're going to turn to people and shake their hand. And so going forward, we're going to be encouraging you every week. Meet someone you don't know. Learn something about them. And some of you, I know, are introverts. You're like me. And meeting people, you just, it's like, terrifies you. I get it. I understand. But you know, you turn at the peace. Just look around, and if you don't know someone, introduce yourself. And if you think, well, I think I'm supposed to know this person, well, just say this. Have we met before? They'll tell you, okay? And for those of you that are concerned about liturgical purity, the prayer book does not say to you, say peace to one another. It doesn't say that. What does it say? Greet one another. Greet one another. Do you know, I just heard a story. Someone visited this church, their first visit. Not this service, so you're off the hook. This person has never been in a liturgical church, doesn't know liturgy at all, had never exchanged the peace, didn't know what that was. I said, greet one another in the name of the Lord, just like it says in the prayer book. So he very naturally just turned to the person next to him and said, hi, my name's such and such. You know what they said to him? Peace. Now, we can say, okay, maybe that person just in that moment, like, froze and didn't know what to do. Oh, my gosh, what do I do? This person didn't say peace to me. Or maybe this person was saying, no, 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 that's not how you do it. I don't know. I'm going to prefer to believe the form, you know, the first option. But either way, it leaves this new person going, what kind of community is this? Like, people don't even want to introduce themselves. So, for those of you that are concerned about ruining the peace, let me just suggest to you, we are at peace. The peace of the Lord be with you and also with you. We've said it, okay? Meet someone. Learn something about them. Jesus made time for the Samaritan woman. And we have to make time to meet the people who are actually in our midst. And I know some of you are thinking, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Okay. That's what I would be saying. No. Let me remind you of Paul's exhortation to the Corinthians. Who are the strong and the weak among us? Well, certainly one way to answer that question I've already alluded to. We, the insiders, are strong. We have the strength of knowledge. We know people, we know what happens in the service, we know where things are. Outsiders, new people, are weak. They have the weakness of no knowledge. They don't know people. They don't know what goes on in a service. They don't know where things are. And Paul would apply the same principle to us that he applied to the Corinthians. He would say, those of you who are strong should be willing to sacrifice for the weak. And why? Why would Paul say this? Where does this principle, where does this idea come from? Well, let's go back to our passage from last week. Philippians chapter 2, Jesus existed in the very nature of God. In other words, he was strong. And yet he did not consider his equality with God as something that he had to hold on to. So he humbled himself. He took on a human nature and willingly gave himself to death on a cross. He was strong, we were weak. So he gave up his power. He inconvenienced himself. He sacrificed himself for our sakes. And Paul tells the Philippians, he says, have that same attitude. And that's what he would say to you and me. Have that same attitude. So we will make every effort to welcome the new people who are in our midst, whatever tiny sacrifice that may actually cost us. We will make the effort to welcome those who are new in our midst because we're followers of Jesus. And this is what we do. Even if we're introverts, following Jesus is actually more important than that. So this is what we do. So I'm about to leave here, but meet someone new and learn something about them before you go home. Don't go home without doing that. And there's somebody in this room that you don't know. So find them, meet them. Learn something about them.